House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, February 23rd, 2015. We have a work session on possible introduction of committee measures.
Mr. Chair, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. So it would be LC 785 dated 6/18/14, LC 790 dated 6/20/14, LC 791 dated 6/18/14, LC 792 dated 6/18/14, LC 3252 dated 2/10/15, and LC 3366 dated 2/9/15.
Representative Olson moves to introduce the LCs as committee measures. Is there any discussion?
It's too many.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2358.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2358 comes to you from the Task Force on Juvenile Court Dependency Proceedings. You established this task force in 2013 through House Bill 3363, and it makes several recommendations on actions that groups could take to change current law as relates to dependency. House Bill 2358 is the outcome of those suggested changes. It creates a pilot program in 4 to 6 counties, including Linn and Yamhill counties, to evaluate whether increasing representation of children, families, and the Department of Human Services in dependency proceedings will reduce the use of foster care. Each county will be evaluated by an independent evaluator, and a report to the Legislative Assembly will be required each odd-numbered year on the status of the pilot programs, and the pilot is set to expire on June 30th, 2021.
Thank you. Judge Love, Megan Schultz, and Nancy Cosine, please. And you can speak in any order you wish. Just be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Megan Schultz. I'm the president of the Oregon CASA Network, and I'm also the executive director of CASA of Lane County. And I appreciate the opportunity to share about House Bill 2358. But I'd like to start really briefly and just share with you how we got here. CASA did a tour of the state and talked to CASA volunteers from all over the state of Oregon back in 2012, the summer of 2012. We talked to them about what was working on the ground and what did they think was not working on the ground. Some of those issues were local issues that needed to be resolved or worked through with the local programs and their courts or DHS. Some of them were things that the Oregon CASA Network could facilitate conversations about on a statewide level. And then there were a host of things that were things that we believed needed to be resolved through legislation. House Bill 3363 was basically a potluck or a potpourri of a lot of issues that CASAs were seeing on the ground that we were trying to resolve. Through the process in 2013, through the legislative process, we ended up in House Bill 3363 forming the Task Force on Juvenile Court Dependency. And that was really trying to bring all the parties and stakeholders together at the table to identify what were the barriers from the moment a child enters the system until we're able to close the case. What are the different barriers that we see, and which role do we each play in either creating those barriers or resolving them? And so it was really a lot of hard work. It was a lot of honest conversations about what was working, what was not working, who was doing what, who was not doing what. The thing that I'm most proud of coming out of that bill, and I think the members of the task force are as well, are the agreements that we came up with. So in your Appendix 1 of this bill, you will see the agreements that each of the stakeholders made about what they could do individually to help resolve barriers. And many of those agreements don't cost any money. They don't require any change in law. So we are doing those. We've already started implementing many of those. But House Bill 2358 was something that we all believed in, that this is something we did need money for. this was a barrier that could not be resolved easily, and this is kind of how we got here today with House Bill, with this bill. So I wanted to turn it over to Judge Love.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name's Valerie Love. I'm a Lane County Circuit Court judge. My assignment is out at juvenile court. Chairman Barker and members of the committee, thank you so much for having us today. And I had the privilege of serving on the task force. And while there are many things I think that we all agreed and made commitments to do to try to improve the work that we do for youth and families without having to have any additional money or change any legislation, I think I want to give you some idea of my caseload, what I see on a day-to-day basis that really supports the need for some additional resources for everybody that does this important work. Just to give you an idea of my day, I am the primary juvenile court judge in Lane County, which means I handle all the dependency cases unless I have a conflict, as well as the cases where youth have matters open in delinquency and dependency court, and as well as the custody matters that the parents may have to have tried so that they have the same judge for everything. Last year alone, we had between original hearings where new petitions were filed by DHS and review of that initial petition, we had nearly 600 of those hearings. We had 292 jurisdictional hearings, I think 52 actual trials, 650 permanency hearings, and 848 separate review hearings. And so I give you that just to give you an idea of where my context is from. And I think, you know, my view is nobody has a monopoly on saying we could use more resources. I think everybody has that. One of the things, though, that I see is for our youth and families, they benefit most often from more review. And right now, we really review the cases maybe twice a year at the most for a lot of them. We have the Citizen Review Board reviewing a lot of our cases on that six-month basis when youth are in substitute care. But I'm thinking of a couple examples where the parties, the children, if it's the parents who need additional support, benefit from having to come to the court more often. I just reviewed a case where between the first petition that was open and then closed because the parents had made sufficient progress and then reopened, this young man had 22 separate foster care placements. Since the second petition has been open, there's been 10 separate placements, and we have tried to review that case more often because that youth has benefited from everybody kind of being held accountable and really working, including the court, on a regular basis to look at what is this child's needs, is it residential treatment, what are we doing to help transition back to the community. And it's been that ongoing contact that I think has really supported stability that we hadn't seen in a long time for that young man. I think of another similar case where a young man in the course of just a few years has had 10 separate placements, and that required coming back to court and talking a lot about, is this child getting the right services? Is the match okay with the services? Is he in the right placement? And he has had a longer period of stability than we had seen in some time. And I think part of that is bringing everybody back together on a regular basis. I can think of other cases where we've had youth with multiple petitions filed, where they may have been in substitute care for a couple of years. And, you know, I had someone say in court once, for a child, a day away from a parent is like an eternity to them. And that uncertainty of not knowing what's going to happen. Sometimes these cases, and this particular young man I'm thinking of, require us to have longer hearings with testimony when people aren't agreeing on what should happen in the case. And with my docket situated the way it is, it can be 4 to 6 to 8 weeks sometimes before we can find a chunk of time, even in the nature of half a day, to try to have that testimony. And that's a long time for a child to wait who's already been waiting for some period of time. I see, while we are trying to review certain cases more often because it's beneficial to all the parties involved, that takes caseworkers away from what they need to be doing out in the field, making sure parents are getting services, making sure everyone's connected. It takes the attorneys away from their time to be meeting with their clients, and all kids in our county are represented by attorneys. That's one thing we do on every petition that's open. But I feel like I see the attorneys and caseworkers so often, I have to wonder, well, when do they have their time outside of work? So I appreciate the time, but I wanted to share with you a little bit of perspective on what I see. And this is what I've been doing every day of my job for the last 18 months. So thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Kozine. I'm the Executive Director at the Office of Public Defense Services. We were very grateful to be able to participate in this task force discussion about representation in dependency cases and about ways that we could reduce the time to permanency for children in our foster care system. And we are very grateful to be here in front of you today. When I was sitting on the task force, one of the conversations that we were having was about a national movement about improving representation for parents in dependency cases. We had testimony from Brett Ballou, who is a managing attorney with the Washington State Parent Representation Program. You have information about that program, I believe, is being delivered to you now. And that program concentrated on increased client contact, reduced caseloads, social worker support, and additionally, increased advocacy for parents. The Washington program did not include children because they actually use guardians ad litem for their children client or for their children in the dependency system. But through their increased representation of parents, they were actually able to achieve some significantly better outcomes. Their reunifications were occurring 1 month sooner, and adoptions and guardianships were occurring 1 year earlier. In their program, caseloads were capped at 80 cases per lawyer. That is a number that is significantly lower than the caseloads that our lawyers here in Oregon are generally carrying in the dependency arena. So after hearing from Mr. Ballou and hearing about the outcomes in Washington, we also talked about a pilot program that our office is launching this year, or excuse me, it launched in August of 2014. It's still going on. We launched in Yamhill and Linn counties, and we are implementing a system very similar to the Washington State program, but we actually are including children. So ours is the parent-child representation program. We have similar measures, measuring attorney-client contact time, measuring the number of days that the case is in the court system before it is resolved at the initial jurisdictional hearing, and looking at how our lawyers are advocating for their clients in these proceedings. When we discussed this as a task force, we started thinking about if Washington could achieve significant results with only improved representation for parents, what would happen if we created a bill that actually improved the representation and the resources for all of the parties in the system? And that is what you have in House Bill 2358. It actually allocates additional resources for DHS to have representation. We hear consistently that there are delays because a caseworker will be in court and they won't have the legal skill to move the case forward. Lawyers have too many cases and they can't schedule follow-up hearings quickly enough. The court docket time is slim. So in House Bill 2358, we envision a system where each entity in the dependency system has the resources they need to move cases through without delay. So I'm happy to answer your questions at any point in time, now or later.
Does anybody have any questions? Representative Post.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Just because I represent part of Yamhill County, I would why Linn and Yamhill counties? So just random, or was there something specific about those counties?
So OPDS actually was able to launch this pilot because we were given a little bit of policy option money at the end of 2013 to improve representation in these case types. So we looked at many counties, and we actually convened what we called partner meetings. So we met with DHS and DOJ and the courts, and we looked at different data points. So we were looking at things like what the caseloads are for the attorneys, whether or not attorneys are present at the shelter hearing. That was a big consideration for us. At the time that children are removed, there is a shelter hearing, and unfortunately, in some of our jurisdictions, the parents and children are not immediately provided with a lawyer. So a lawyer might be appointed, but the meeting between the parent or child and the lawyer might not happen until 3 or 4 weeks into the case, and that in and of itself was causing delays. So we were looking at counties where there was not consistent representation available at the shelter hearing. We were also looking at length of time in care, the number of children in foster care, and we were also working with DHS to make sure we didn't select any county that had the differential response program launching. So there were a lot of different considerations, but those two counties stood out as accessible, but with some timelines that we wanted to improve.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The hypothesis of this pilot study, this demonstration, is that if there's more lawyers available earlier in the process, there will be successful, more successful movements to permanency. And I was wondering whether that comes about because in those places where they are available or where everything is working right, the movement towards permanency is a lot faster than the than it is otherwise. I mean, is this something that leads to the conclusion that this is the cause of the delay to permanency?
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlee, working off of what we learned from Washington State and really what we're seeing as part of a national movement, that is the hypothesis, that because court dockets are full, because lawyers have big caseloads, cases aren't moving forward largely because of scheduling delays and lack of adequate contact time with clients. And I shouldn't leave caseworkers out of it. I think their caseworkers are large as well. And you have caseworkers going to court and not having the legal training that they need to respond to arguments.
Yeah, I thought we had dealt with that in earlier years to move more lawyers into because the caseworkers weren't necessarily the right case. But is that the main, I guess what I'm asking is that really the main barrier to getting people in permanency?
Chairman Barker and Representative Greenlee, I think building on what Nancy just talked about, I think overall seeing more engagement through with all the parties, and so having an attorney who can have more time to meet with his or her client, caseworker who can have more time to meet, that early active engagement with everyone, not all cases, but many seem to go much smoother and without some of the delays. And so if there's an issue, for example, that might be problematic in a case, somebody can address that earlier instead of kind of waiting 6 months before the first time anybody sees it. And so that's just a general view that I've had that's consistent with, I think, what Washington State has told us during their presentations.
Well, we have some of the same questions in the next bill in terms of moving towards successful adulthood. I mean, both things, it seems to me there's so many barriers in the system. I wonder whether a simple answer will end up with results that you can say, oh yes, doubling the CASAs and doubling the lawyers available. Now the permanency rate moved from, I don't know how long it is now, it's pretty long, to half as long. Is that the hope that those are the kind of results that we'll be able to see?
Mm-hmm. Chair Barker, Representative Greenlee, in the Washington State program, they did reduce the time to adoption by a year, and that was through just improved representation for parents. And what we hear and what we're hearing in our current program is that when a parent goes into this system having had their child removed, it sometimes creates a barrier between the parent and the agency. The parent is distrustful, their child is in state care, and it's the same agency offering them services as remove their child. And in some cases, the parents are able to engage quickly and really get on the right track. And there are other cases where that barrier is just significant. And when there are delays in the amount of time between the removal of the child and the time that that parent can meet with a lawyer to understand what their rights are and how they can approach the case, that 3 to 4 week window can really turn the outcome of the case. If you can get the parent engaged early and into services, or in some cases, there are issues that need to be litigated, and that's appropriate. If you can get the parent engaged and working on the case right away, then you're gonna avoid delays down the line. So in addition to the general scheduling issues, that parent engagement is very critical.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've been here 15 years. For 15 years, I've been watching this and working on this to some degree, and it's important. The more time you spend with it, I want to take it back a little bit because I think some of the newer members might want to know. Representative Schaffer, Senator Cruz, and Senator Brown, who just happens to be our governor now, was on a work group back in, I think, 2005. And one of the things we were looking for, we passed some little pieces of legislation to do some things, but the one thing we didn't get was funding for this representation, because even back then we knew there were some things that would work out better with representation. Then I happened to get in a plane with this judge named David Brewer, who's on the Supreme Court now, and it was October 15th of 2009, and flew to Austin, Texas for the Chief Justice's Symposium on Dependency. I'd never been with that many judges at one time. You know, there were some pretty smart people in the room. And we had these breakout sessions. We get all done after 2 days, and what's the conclusion? That competent legal representation up front, not only is it get to justice and fairness quicker, but it does save money. We've known it. It's time to fund it. I don't, when you got a cop looking for, trying to promote full-time employment for attorneys, it's got to be the right thing to do. One of the reasons I'm here now and not home on my tree farm is this issue this year yet. I'm not going to leave till we get it done. My doctor just told me I could live to be 115. I said, that's going to disappoint a lot of people. So I can be here another term or two terms or three terms. We're going to get it done. It's extremely important, this legal representation, caseloads, attorneys meeting their clients out in the hall, not preparing for a case. That goes on constantly. That's not adequate representation. It's not only the dollars that you're going to save, it's getting the kids placed properly and getting families reunited timely, getting that stress off the family and getting them back to being citizens again. You know, I don't know if there's a bill that we're going to deal with that's more important in my mind than the one we're dealing with today. So thank you for what you all do. I had a great conversation in my office the other day with Judge Abernathy. Judge Brewer's coming in. We're going to hammer this thing home, I hope, and we just got to convince the chairs of Ways and Means how important this is. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Further, thank you very much. We appreciate it and appreciate the work you're doing out there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doug Parker Road, please. Is there anyone else who wants to testify in this bill today?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name's Doug Harkelrode. I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon District Attorneys Association part-time. I come to you today about this bill because there is no additional funding in this bill for the district attorneys, and there needs to be some money there. Because they do, this varies around the state, but they do original jurisdiction hearings. And if there's going to be more resource put on the other side, those hearings, when you put lawyers on both sides, it just means there's more work to do, there's more motions filed, and it's going to take longer. And I think the result will be better. So I would just suggest that the bill needs to include funding for the district attorneys. And Brad Berry would be here today. He's doing the pilot project as the prosecution side in Yamhill County, except for the fact that he's in some kind of a two-day hearing and he couldn't come. But he was worried about the pilot project there and the additional resource that's being required of his office because of that project. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Harper? Thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 23. 58 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2908.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2908 brings Oregon law into compliance with H.R. 4980. This was passed by Congress just last year and signed by the President on September 29th, 2014. It intends to prevent and address sex trafficking of children in foster care. It extends and improves adoption incentives and to improve international child support recovery. House Bill 2908 deals mainly with children in foster care and dependency. We are still waiting for the fiscal and revenue statement on this. It is not ready to move today.
Okay. Megan Hassan, Joanne Southley, it's like Lois Day. And Mr. Bart, if you want to come up and drag an extra chair up, we can do it all at once. Or you can wait, your choice. You can go in any order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Megan Hassan. I'm a law and policy analyst with the Oregon Judicial Department, and I'm here today with Lois Day, the Director of Child Welfare at the Department of Human Services, and Joanne Southey from she's the attorney in charge of child advocacy at the Department of Justice. And the three of us were part of a work group that looked at how to make conforming amendments to Oregon law to implement the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act. There are four substantive changes provided by the bill, and I'm just going to provide a brief overview of that. I did submit some written materials with a section-by-section analysis, and then if you have any questions for the three of us, we'd be happy to answer those. So first, under the bill, to bring Oregon in compliance with the new federal law, the permanency plan of APLA can only be designated for children age 16 and up. So as you may know, APLA is the acronym for another planned permanent living arrangement, and it's available for kids who are placed in permanent foster care, in residential care, or in independent living. So under House Bill 2908, the court will have to look at those cases that are currently in APLA plans where children are under 16 and find a higher level permanency plan like adoption, guardianship, or placement with a fit and willing relative. Secondly, the bill requires DHS to include information about whether the child's foster parent is providing the child with regular ongoing opportunities to engage and appropriate extracurricular enrichment, cultural, and social activities in reports both to the court and to the Citizen Review Board. And in addition, under the bill, the court and the Citizen Review Board, in cases involving children in permanency plans of APLA who are age 16 or older, will have to make findings as to whether this is actually happening and whether or not foster kids are receiving those opportunities for appropriate activities. Third, the bill requires DHS to ensure case plans address transition planning for kids age 14 and up. Under current Oregon law, transition planning has to happen at age 16 and up. And these kinds of activities help prepare kids for their transition into adulthood and finding a job and getting an appropriate education and finding housing. So this will require DHS to start that process earlier, and I know in some cases they're already doing that. In addition, at permanency hearings, the court will have to make a finding as to the adequacy of this plan and whether or not appropriate services are being offered pursuant to the transition plan. And then finally, House Bill 2809 would require DHS to include in the child's case plan a document containing a list of the child's rights under state and federal law. And this is to be explained to the child and signed by the child and placed in the child's case plan. And that's all I have. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Lois Day. I'm the Director for Child Welfare at the Department of Human Services. I'm here today to state the department's in favor of this legislation. And as Ms. Hasten stated, it brings us in statutory alignment with the federal legislation But this is the beginning. The legislation from the federal system is quite extensive, and it is a three-year implementation process, so this begins our work. There's a lot of programmatic work, but this helps us set the base statutorily, and from there we'll do the rest of the work. So thank you for allowing us to come and present to you today, and I'm certainly open to any kind of questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Joanne Southey. I'm with the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm the Deputy Chief Counsel for the Civil Enforcement Division and the Attorney in Charge of the Child Advocacy Section. This law is necessary to bring Oregon into compliance with federal law, and not being in compliance with that law would have funding implications for the agency and also cause other issues on an ongoing basis in our courts, in juvenile court statewide. I'm just here also to provide technical assistance if this committee has any questions. Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is James Barta. I'm the relatively new legislative director for Children First, and I want to echo the sentiments. I'm going to thank DHS for the work they've been doing to get us into federal compliance. I also want to thank Senator Wyden. He was one of the leaders in this bill that is able to call attention to foster youth and helping them as well. One of the groups that we work with is Oregon Foster Youth Connection, and so serendipitously, one of their priorities is to support more activities, more extracurricular activities in particular, and having this come from the youth and from the federal government at the same time is really a good thing, and we look forward to working with DHS to expand the age-appropriate activities to make sure they include extracurricular activities as well, and we will have legislation addressing that in the future.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Committee, anybody have any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony today. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2908. And a reminder that tomorrow the committee will not be meeting, where we will be taking a tour of the DPSST facility. And I would like to remind the committee that Wednesday is the last day for unlimited bill drops. So you need to get anything hanging out there. No further business to come before the committee. We stand adjourned. No further business to come before the committee. We stand adjourned.